This is 2021, 11-31-32, and too many cases to recite here. Virginia Milton and Arnold Milton versus the United States. And let me ask counsel preliminarily, be mindful and alert to the likelihood that judges may ask a question. When we're in open court, you can see when we're about to pounce on you, but you can't see us now. So rather than have two of us talking at once, please be alert to the sound of a judge asking a question. Please proceed, Mr. Post.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it, and may it please the court. The question presented in this case is not whether property owners downstream of the Attucks and Barker reservoirs have a property right to perfect flood control. It is whether those property owners held their property in fee simple, not subject to a flowage easement, and assuming so, whether they must bear the cost of the government's decision to inundate downstream properties as a precautionary measure, not as an emergency action during Tropical Storm Harvey. The Court of Federal Claims denied these claims based on the lack of a property interest in what it called perfect flood control. But to be clear, that ruling knocked down a straw man. The property owners have never alleged a property right to perfect flood control. They allege fee simple title unencumbered by any flowage easement. And the court's ruling that Texas property owners have no protected property right under these circumstances cannot be reconciled with bedrock principles of Texas law.
Mr. Post, is there any governing Texas precedent establishing a property interest in perfect flood control?
Your Honor, I don't believe that any Texas precedent addresses that question. That's not the relevant property interest as recognized in Texas law. Texas law recognizes the right to hold property free of a flowage easement. The precedents established that proposition, I think, well. And there are four Texas Supreme Court cases in particular that I would call the court's attention to establish that proposition. The first is the Texas Supreme Court's decision in the City of Graham case in 1961, where the Supreme Court found a taking of a flowage easement over property upstream of a dam based on alterations in river flow. And the second is the Gragg decision in 2004, where the Supreme Court found a taking of a flowage easement over property downstream of a dam based on reservoir operations that created flood conditions. Taken together, those two cases established that the Texas Supreme Court recognizes a property right in this context, and the existence of that right does not turn on whether the property is upstream or downstream of a dam. And as the court knows, the appellants have filed a motion to take judicial notice of the judgments in City of Graham and in Gragg because those judgments established the precise nature of the Texas property right. They established that the government took a flowage easement, granting it a right to flood, overflow, inundate, and submerge the property. And that's exactly the property right that's at issue in this litigation.
There's no basis for a distinction in terms of the law between this case and the already decided upstream case.
That is correct, Your Honor. With respect to the property right, there's no basis for a distinction. If Judge Smith's rationale were correct, that would be equally true as to the upstream case. And Judge Lutto, we believe, correctly differentiated between this property right question under state law and the federal takings question and recognized that under Texas state law, these property owners do have a protected property interest. And so I think that's a conflict that this court cannot tolerate when you have the same question decided arising out of the same event by two members of the Court of Federal Claims reaching
counsel, different this is Judge
yes,
Chen. Unfortunately, I can't remember the names of the cases, but I do believe the other side and maybe the claims court as well cited to some example cases where courts have found that some kind of pre-existing limitation existed to an owner's property right, such that the property right wasn't as expansive as it normally is as a default matter, but it was cabined by some pre-existing limitation. And I was hoping you could speak to that and explain why that's not true in this instance when people were purchasing homes downstream of a dam with floodgates.
I'd be delighted to, Your Honor. That's actually a principal focus of the point that I wanted to make today, because I think the government's characterization of those cases is inaccurate. Let me begin by pointing the court to two recent Supreme Court decisions that I think recognize the basic property right, and then turn to how those cases synthesize with the proposition you're asking about. In the Kerr decision in 2016, the Supreme Court recognized that a conscious decision to subject particular properties to inundation would give rise to a taking claim. The necessary predicate of that holding is that there's a protected property right against inundation. And just last year, in the Medina decision, which arose out of state court litigation involving Tropical Storm Harvey, so the same context involving flooding of downstream properties, the Supreme Court said that a decision to flood downstream properties for a public purpose can be compensable as a physical taking. And so those cases established the property right as a general proposition. Now, with respect to the question that the court has posed, how that reconciles with the idea of background principle. The briefs obviously clash sharply over that issue, and I think I can synthesize these cases for the court today, because the cases cited by the government about background principles and police power, when studied closely, all come down to a common denominator, which is the necessity defense. In a proper case, the privilege to invade property out of necessity is a background principle that may limit property rights. And the U.S. Supreme Court recognized that general proposition in the Lucas decision. And just last year in Cedar Point, Chief Justice Roberts alluded to that, pointing to necessity as a limitation on property rights. The problem is the government can't make a necessity argument here, because as this court has held in Trinco Investment Company, the defense requires an imminent danger and an actual emergency that gives rise to an actual necessity. The government doesn't even assert that defense in this appeal because the facts don't support it. And in fact, in the upstream case, Judge Leto denied it on the merits. You can see that in the appendix at pages 56, 65 to 66. And our record is the same.
Is it wrong to call Hurricane Harvey in 2017 an act of God?
It is not wrong to call the hurricane an act of God, but...
And so there was, therefore, there was a major emergency situation on the ground.
That's actually not correct, Your Honor, on our record, because the hurricane did not flood these properties. And I want to give the court a series of appendix citations that are critical on this point. The downstream properties did not flood because of discharge from the hurricane and the rainfall. They flooded because the government opened the floodgates. And at page 2132 of the appendix, the Corps admits that its decision to open the floodgates was not an act of God. And here is what is really critical for understanding the necessity point.
Well, that's a question
the
of
reservoir.
Causation.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's a question of causation, which wasn't decided below, and we can't decide here, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the causation issue was not decided below, and it's not necessary to reach here. But the question whether the floodgates were in an emergency situation is a factual question that relates to this alleged background limitation. And factually, it is incorrect. And I point the court to the Corps' own official statements. You can see at page 4151 of the appendix and page 631 of the appendix, the Corps' official statements during this operation when it was ordering the induced surcharges, where the Corps said the structures continue to perform as they were designed to do. And critically, at page 2136 of the appendix, you will see the Corps' own assessment after the fact, in which the Corps reached the conclusion that the project was performing as expected with no significant problems during Tropical Storm Harvey. The facts are, and the Corps admits it, yes,
is the question of whether there was an actual necessity part of the analysis of whether a taking occurred and not whether plaintiffs have a property interest? I just want to make sure I understand exactly where that fits into the analysis, in your view.
Your Honor, in my view, it is best understood as part of the taking analysis as a defense to the act of a taking. But there is authority for the proposition to the extent there was a viable necessity defense that would give rise to a privilege that would be a limitation on the property right. But the point here is that the government doesn't have the record to to establish that necessity defense. So it doesn't have a limitation on the right. And the last two appendix references I would give to the court are at pages 2133 and 1421, where the Corps' representatives admitted there was no threat of immediate dam failure. This was not an emergency. That is why the government is not arguing the necessity defense here. But without the ability to argue necessity, there is no limiting background principle of Texas law that limits the property right. And the final point I'd make is that...
Counsel, if we were to decide to remand this case, what would you say would be kind of the scope of proceedings that would need to happen below, in your view?
Your Honor, in my view, the court should decide as a matter of law the existence of a protected property interest. We certainly have addressed in the briefing the elements of the takings claim, but we believe upon reflection that the most prudent course would be to decide the property rights question and then remand the other questions for full development. And there really are three reasons, if I may explain to Your Honor, why that would be my view. The first is that the court obviously does not have a reasoned decision from the lower court on those takings elements, and we think precise recognition of the property rights could guide the court. The second is that the upstream case covers many of these same issues. There's a liability judgment in upstream, and the damage trial is set for March 21, so it might be better to let those records be fully developed. And the third, and I think an important prudential point, is that this court has before it, in the Idaker Farms appeal, the causation question that is tertiary to our case, but is principal to Idaker Farms. And in that case, former Solicitor General Donald Verrilli is clashing directly with the government over the correct causation analysis, where you have a situation like this where prior acts have reset the causation baseline. We think it might be better to let Idaker Farms develop that issue before it's decided in our case.
This is Judge Chen. Are those plaintiffs in the same footing as the plaintiffs here, in the downstream?
The Idaker Farms case?
Yes.
Your Honor, those plaintiffs have a judgment. They have proceeded to final judgment, and they are defending a judgment.
And what's the status of the appeal?
The appeal is in the briefing stage. The principal briefs have been filed. That is case number 2021-1849 and 1875, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
We will do that, Mr. Post. Mr. Toth for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Hurricane Harvey was the largest rainstorm recorded in the nation's history, a natural disaster that resulted in billions of dollars in property damage and dozens of lives lost. The storm was undeniably a tragedy, but it was not a Fifth Amendment taking by the government. Plaintiffs make the extraordinary claim that the Fifth Amendment requires compensating them for flooding that occurred on their properties downstream of the Buffalo Bayou and Tributaries Project, two dams and reservoirs operated in this highly flood-prone region by the Army Corps of Engineers, solely for the purpose of flood control and according to a longstanding water control manual. Court of Federal Claims dismissed plaintiffs' claims, and for the numerous reasons outlined in our brief, that dismissal was correct. I'd like to focus on two main points this morning.
Yeah, this is Judge Chen. I was just curious, is there any case law that has defined a property interest of a landowner as a right to perfect flood control in the face of an act of God?
No, and that's our first contention, that there is not a case that recognizes a plaintiff as a right.
I guess another way of asking it is, I'm not aware of any case that's posed the property right interest question in that manner.
I think that's a fair observation. I think our point is that there is a baseline that the court needs to recognize in terms of what happened prior to the government's discretionary decision to build this project in the first instance, which is that there was natural flooding. And that background principle of a baseline can be viewed through a lot of different legal lenses in deciding these issues. In the St. Bernard Parish case, causation viewed the entirety of the government action as depending on the baseline, a comparison to the baseline of what would have happened before the government acted to build either of the projects that were issued in that case. And that was dispositive there. And the same is true here, both for causation and for the property interest.
Okay, but is there a case out there that has defined the property interest of a landowner in a water flooding case in a way that confines it to some kind of pre-existing limitation, which is what the claims court appeared to be doing here, or as opposed to just straight up was a flow adjustment taken by the government?
So I'm not aware of a case that's precisely been decided in those terms, either for or against our position. That's why I think the claims court looked to the general principles under state law of recognizing that the police power is a background principle of any property interest. But no, to directly answer your question, there is not a case that decided that in the context of the specific facts we're talking about here.
I heard the other side say that the government is not claiming a necessity defense, because of necessity, that is a hard limit on the property right interests here of the plaintiffs.
They're correct. We're not arguing that on appeal because there is a dispute of material fact about that defense, but we did reserve it by asserting it on page 723 of the appendix in our answer. And if the case were to be remanded, we would certainly raise it as a defense to be litigated at trial, but we can't ask for judgment in our favor on the record here at this summary judgment stage on that issue.
However, can I also ask you about the scope of a remand? So if we were to remand it, and you just alluded to that possibility, what would you say would be need to be done at the claims court in your view?
Well, certainly, if you decided the case only on the narrow ground of whether there was a protected property interest, all the remaining issues that the parties have raised in the appellate briefs here would have to be decided. That could occur potentially through another round of summary judgment briefing, or it could occur potentially through trial proceedings. The issue of causation is really at the forefront of our defense, and we believe that the record here provides an alternative basis for affirming the CFC's decision on the basis of causation. Much like the St. Bernard Parish dispute, the parties here disagree over the correct legal standard applicable for causation, but even under a formulation that's very generous to plaintiffs, the record here supports the government's contention that in the absence of the project, and indeed, even assuming the presence of the project, in the absence of the Corps closing the gates on a Friday afternoon to detain stormwater that fell exclusively from the storm, the plaintiffs would have been flooded to a greater degree. They cannot demonstrate that the Corps of Engineers, rather than the storm, was the cause of the flooding on their property.
So in your view, you don't believe causation would need to be tried if we were to remand? Is that what you're contending? I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying.
Correct. We believe that it could be decided in our favor on summary judgment. It could also be decided by this court as an alternative ground for appeal. But yes, certainly we believe that under the correct legal standard, we win on causation and that there's not a dispute of fact.
This is Judge Chen. Is there a potentially key distinction between the facts here and the facts of St. Bernard Parish in that here we had a dam operator make the conscious choice to raise the floodgates, which then caused a whole bunch of water in the reservoirs to flow downstream, as opposed to St. Bernard Parish, where there was no government actor doing that? They were just these levees that had been built, and the levees were designed to help avoid flooding, but there wasn't any government action like the one I just described here. Is that fair to say?
That's the distinction that my friend on the other side would like to make, but my view is that, and the government's view is that that is too narrow of a picture of the government's action at issue here.
I understand that. You want to look at the larger question of just going back in time to building the dam and reservoir in the first place. But what I'm trying to say is maybe there's just this added little twist in this case that doesn't quite make it on all fours with St. Bernard Parish.
There's certainly the added twist of the government operating a flood control project just to protect plaintiff's properties and then having to open the gates and that being alleged to be the cause of the flooding. I think you don't even need to reach back to the construction of the project. You just need to reach back several days to the Friday of the storm when the dam was not holding back any water whatsoever. The reservoirs were completely dry. They filled up by Friday afternoon, and the Corps then made the conscious, intentional decision to close the gates in accordance with its operating manual. So I think that the intent there was to operate the project over the course of the storm in accordance with the manual, and that manual serves the project's objective of using the space in the reservoir to the maximum extent practicable to protect downstream properties and other properties, but principally, the city of Houston and the Houston Ship Channel. That's inuring to plaintiff's benefit. It was only on that Sunday evening, a couple days later, when the Corps began releasing water, again, in accordance with its manual. So the intent that we're talking about, I think it cannot be sliced so thinly to examine only that Sunday evening event without also looking at just a couple days prior. The point of all of this is that it was the Corps' operation of the project during the entire storm that is at issue and that should be looked at.
Anything further, counsel?
I'm not sure where I'm at on my time, Your Honor.
I think you're at about 9 minutes, and so you probably have about 6 minutes more, and you'll hear the signal when your time has expired.
Very good, yes. To address the first argument that my friend was making about the protected property rights, I think that is reinforced by not just state law, but also the Federal Flood Control Act, as well as background principles of government police power. The property interest has to be construed in light of the decision by Congress in the late 1920s to embark upon a program of flood control and eventually extended throughout the nation in the 1930s. When it did so,
Is federal law relevant when it comes to defining what a property interest is? I thought that was governed by state law.
It's principally governed by state law, but I think here where you have the Corps acting in exercise of the police powers conferred upon it by Congress in exercise of its Commerce Clause power, that legitimately can be a lens through which you view the property interest here. Particularly, the Flood Control Act conferred broad immunity on the government. In other contexts, the immunity provision 702C is not directly applicable here, but it was integral to Congress's decision in the first instance to embark upon this program of charging the Army Corps of Engineers with flood control across the nation. And that, as
Council,
I said,
can you address California versus United States in terms of the Flood Control Act? You were just getting into that point in your argument here.
Yeah, so our point is that California holds that it was in the context of a contract dispute that the Flood Control Act 702C does not take away the Tucker Act jurisdiction. And we are not arguing as an issue of jurisdiction that the Tucker Act doesn't extend to Fifth Amendment claims or that somehow through 702C Congress has taken away jurisdiction over these claims. What I'm trying to emphasize is the context within which the Army Corps of Engineers was originally charged with its statutory mission of protecting properties against flooding and attempting to control flooding. And if you examine the legislative history of that provision as explained in the James decision by the Supreme Court, you'll find that Congress understood well that it was conferring broad immunity for property damages owing to the operation of a flood control project. And it would not have done so If it also didn't have an understanding, and this is borne out by the legislative history, that any sorts of tort claims that might be immunized by the statute could not be repled as takings claims. And in particular, I would point the court to Judge Easterbrook's decision from the Seventh Circuit that's cited in Arkansas Game and Fish decision. Chicago Railway Company case, where the Seventh Circuit made that clear, that the limitations on tort liability that Congress had enacted were not merely pleading obstacles to be overcome by repackaging a claim in terms of takings law.
Could you speak to how police power can be in the property interest context apply to redefine that property interest downwards? It's so-called police power doctrine is a very vague kind of a club and seems very case specific. I don't know how it applies in the context here. I know there's a disputed fact about necessity here, so putting that to the side, what's left of your police power argument in the property interest context?
Well, it's certainly our argument is that the police power forms a background principle of when in the bundle of sticks that plaintiff's property right makes up, and that any property right they have, I mean, they certainly have a fee simple interest. It's just whether that bundle of sticks includes the right to be protected against flooding in all circumstances by the federal government. And the federal government here, it's not just that the plaintiffs want their property protected according to the way the Corps has decided to protect it under its manual. It's that they want the Corps to operate the project differently upon pain of compensation. So the Corps has, in that sense, exercised already its judgment and its authority given to it by Congress to protect against flooding, and we think that makes up a background principle that you have to understand in determining whether they have a stick in their bundle of sticks that makes up their property right to demand such a level of protection.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is all of that best understood as part of the step two analysis in the takings and trying to figure out whether the government is responsible for causing and taking a flowage easement here.
No, I take your Honor's point, and I understand my time to be up, but I'll attempt to address your question.
Thank you.
The case, the court has different options in how to resolve this case. I take Your Honor's point about the property interests and that the principles we are discussing might be better conceived in terms of taking liability, but I don't think that prevents the court from ruling in the government's favor on any of the alternative grounds that we've laid out in our brief or that I've already discussed.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Post has some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address three subjects in my rebuttal time: the existence of the property right, the argument about background principles and police power, and the question of causation. First, I think it's telling that in response to Judge Chen's question, the government concedes no Texas case has ever framed the property right as a perfect flood control right, and there's really no answer to the Texas Supreme Court decisions that recognize the core property right at issue. That's sufficient to decide our case. Second, the argument about background principles. This is the necessity issue because, as I pointed out in the opening argument, the background principles that could be material to the existence of a property right as recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court are the privileges to invade property for nuisance or necessity. The government honorably concedes that's not at issue in this appeal because the record will not permit it. And there's no other background principle. Now, Judge Chen, you asked for a case that speaks to this issue in particular, and you asked about the relationship between these principles and police power. I would call your attention in particular to the City of Teague versus pardon me, the City of Austin versus Teague decision, a 1978 decision by Justice Jack Pope, who is really a legendary jurist in Texas. He looked at the history of the relationship between eminent domain power and the police power in Texas jurisprudence. And he explained that going back to the City of Graham decision in 1961, the Texas Supreme Court had rejected semantic line-drawing efforts to distinguish between eminent domain power and police power. And since City of Graham, Justice Pope wrote, this court has in three decisions rejected the dichotomy, holding that one's property may not be taken without compensation, even in the exercise of the police power. And 2 years later, in the Steele versus City of Houston case, Justice Pope returned to that same proposition and said the court had, quote, moved beyond the earlier notion that the government's duty to pay for taking property rights is excused by labeling the taking as an exercise of police powers. So that distinction that the government stands on is no longer recognized in Texas takings law. With respect to the government's argument about the Flood Control Act, I really can't do better than the retort that Justice Scalia gave when the government made this argument in Arkansas Game. He said Congress can't overrule the takings clause. If this is a taking under federal law, the Flood Control Act is not a defense. Finally, the third topic on causation, I want to affirm Judge Chen's question about a key distinction between this case and St. Bernard Parish being a conscious decision to inundate downstream properties. It is not simply a distinction we draw. It is the distinction the government drew in St. Bernard Parish. It is a correct distinction because otherwise the government would be able to flood any number of downstream properties across the United States that were developed in reliance on government flood control projects.
The court St. Bernard opinion didn't hinge its view on that question, right? It didn't make a distinction between conscious decision versus non-conscious decision.
The court was not called on to make that distinction. It acknowledged that the government was not pressing that point. The government had drawn that distinction itself. And so the court in St. Bernard Parish was dealing only with the case of a claim of a taking arising out of the entire operation of a flood control project. That's a different claim materially than a claim about operation of a flood control project and a deliberate decision to inundate downstream properties. And I think the government was correct to draw that distinction in St. Bernard Parish, and it should not be allowed to walk away from it now.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel for excellent arguments. The case is submitted.